Hi, I'm Josh, and you know, Matt, you're doing a good job, buddy.
Hi, I'm Matt, great. And I feel like I'm really grateful that you're a kind friend to me, unlike that asshole cat.
Oh, way to fuck up the intro. Good job, buddy.
It's, don't look now, but I'm pretty sure all of these voices are coming from my head.
Or Jim Adderson is ahead of sitting on the table. This is Charlie down in Austin. You know, there's this last week. It's kind of a bummer. There's been a series of break-ins in the gay district downtown. That was the warehouse district, which is downtown, kind of west downtown. They don't have much to go on. They don't have leads or whatever. It's kind of a shitty thing. The only thing they have to go on is that they think that the person's either gay or just real clever. Because my God. What a line. What a line.
Reference.
What a line.
Oh man, Breeders has like some 80s gems of dialogue.
Oh my God.
But I would say that as far as reviewing Breeders, we're going to hit like a cannonball tonight.
I would say we'll be together
on our show hot dog.
So first up, we have our short film for the week, which is We Together, or Nosotros Juntos.
Ah, I like that.
I'll take it. I like it, yeah.
Juntos.
I love that we feel like we get to, and I've probably said this before, we get to evaluate the quality of the Spanish language. Yeah, like though, like, if they were to disappoint us, we'd be like,
Yeah, but you do.
You're capricious.
Like, but I absolutely like do, yeah.
That
was pretty weak.
Yeah. I think capricious linguist, like, yeah, yeah.
Capricious linguist.
It's not often you nail the title in the opening segment.
Oh, Lord.
Like, better to be capricious than cunning, I suppose, if you're a linguist. Fantastic. So our short this week was called We Together. I believe I've touched on that briefly.
Yes.
We have a bunch of zombies. We have some people inside hiding from the zombies. We got a guy, one of the zombies hears music playing from a boombox in a kind of heightened reality kind of way, and begins to remember ever so slightly details of,
yes,
like working backstage behind the counter in a pizza joint back in the kitchen, and kind of dancing as he washes dishes, and you know, he and his buddy, and by the end of it, his buddy has also kind of keyed into that and has become more human, and
it did exactly what I wanted it to do.
Yeah. And they, at the end, they both come back to themselves and are fully human in the middle of a horde of zombies, which descend on them as we fade to black, which, perfect.
Oh God.
Yeah, this is so good. This is fantastic for a number of reasons.
Yes.
Not the least of which the guy, I don't know if he, the Pride Week stuff a while ago, but this guy, Derek, Nemechek, the guy who did the choreography for this, did a video called We're All a Little Bit Gay. And it's really funny. And it's got this great choreography. And he's just sort of a working dancer, choreographer guy. But like, when I saw his name in the credits, like, I wonder if my brain Swiss cheese. So like, go type. Like, oh.
You are the last person that gets to say that you don't have a good recall for things, Charlie. You were like date and AP and best grip on a movie. And we've never heard of the movie.
Except he will give you all that information and say, you know, I was just talking about it with, Conlon, Charlie, he's your son.
He's his child, the offspring guy, not the
Dexter Holland one.
No, yeah, not the, oh shit.
The actual offspring.
But no, I thought that was pretty cool. Cause the dance part of this, cause I mean, of course I've mentioned this many times, but like, I'm a huge fan of dance. I love dance
it's
stuff.
Real
I take,
good.
I take dance lessons and do that kind of stuff. Try to get my ass out and move around a little bit and whatever. And so I think it's awesome. So I love dance stuff. So when I saw them start to go, I was like, holy shit. Like that is just brings this whole thing into this kind of like, well, we're not telling a story so much as we're just sort of like just making a thing. It's like a snow globe almost. It's just a thing.
The story is, like I said, like it goes exactly where you hope it will in exactly the way you want it to. But I would say that the strengths of this are, it really builds the anticipation where I was leaning in like, just do it. Just break out and dance.
Yeah.
Just do it. And they really just kind of keep dangling the carrot in front of you for that. Like they're so patient on the payoff.
Well, it's cool that I think it works. Is that like our first guy who starts to do the dance, who's the first one who dances, like when he first starts to go, like he's doing a little bit of a shamble stumble thing.
It's a bit of a thriller dance.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, like, he does it in such a way that, like, it looks like a shambling kind of careening zombie, and then it starts to pick up a little bit of rhythm to it, and it's like, that was badass. That is like, that takes boldness on the part of a performer and a choreographer to, like, we gotta just go with it. We gotta just go with it.
And then once he gets going and they're intercutting it with him doing it at the pizza joint, dude's got moves and it's really fun and it's so fast and just so, it's like this weird controlled flailing that is just really fun to watch. And it's, and you know, of course it is exactly what you need. It's very, very visually dynamic as opposed to staggering zombie. You know, it's probably wilder than you might normally go, just to make that contrast more evident. And then when eventually, you know, second zombie kind of looks at him and they have that really great moment that is, it was very reminiscent of, and we were just talking about this because it's being remounted currently at the Minnesota Fringe, Bird of Seven Colors, where your protagonist gal gets to a scene, watches a choreographed dance, and then is sort of invited into that thing and has like two or three steps and then is now joining them in the previously seen choreographed thing and they become one big dance. Before it changes and moves on. And it's like this guy has like his shitty movements that you can tell are meant to mimic the really now awesome funky moves of the guy that's fully around. And after like one or two spins, then it is now two people doing the perfect complementary dances, nailing the choreography. And it does not matter that that's insane because it is so satisfying. You know, you have that like, moment. So good.
But it's satisfying story-wise too, because you get just really amazing economy of storytelling in this, where the guy, we know this guy worked at the pizza place with his friend, and we can fill in just the days that they spent together, like, in this shitty job, but happy because they get to hang out.
Chill enough that, and you know, like, in the, they only ever show the two gals working the counter.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, in the distance. There's no, like, I don't think there's even an implied relationship there at all.
Yeah.
Aside from coworkers that get along. And that alone is so refreshing. Like, you know, like, oh, and like, they appreciate, like, check out this dude dancing. And none of them are making fun of him. They're all kind of laughing because it's amazing that you just break dancing in a pizza place. But they're all smiling and happy. And his, you know, dude next to him is just like, what? And then clearly also they've done it enough that he knows the dance.
Yeah.
So like, they're not, you know, they're ready to join in. Like, it's, oh, it's so good. So good.
So you get that actual poignancy in there from, these were friends and they had their humanity stolen from them and then they get their humanity back too late to do any good for them, but.
Which I think is more powerful even because they both have tears running down their cheeks.
Yeah. But to me that's like, you know, if you're gonna go out, you might as well go out as a person and not as a zombie.
Yep.
Feels like. This reminded me of Stranger Things in a way, which a lot of things are because I'm like three episodes from the end of the fucking season and it's killing me.
Sure.
Careful, but, you, because I've not had a chance to watch it because Connor's not back yet.
I will say about Stranger Things and about this, it does so many things right in a way that it could do them so very wrong. It could have taken this super comedic. Way abstract and fantastical. It could have gone too gritty.
It could have been too saccharine, yeah, too.
It could have just been super silly.
Yeah.
To watch them dance, and that was what
it could have made you laugh, not because it was like joyous, but because it was a dumb idea, and I never had that instinct at all watching this.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was fantastic. Everybody's got to watch this.
Yeah, definitely watch this for sure.
It's very, very neat.
Weird thing is, I was talking to Dan Peltzman of the Twin Cities Horror Fest.
I know that guy.
Twin Cities Horror Fest, and he said, "Dude, I saw this short that I don't know if you'll dig it, but you got to see it, and it's this zombie who like." Here's music from a boombox and starts to dance and becomes more human. I won't spoil it for you. And that was a week before.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. So it was interesting to watch it and go, oh, that's the thing Dan was talking about.
Yeah.
No wonder he was talking about it.
Good instincts, Dan. Right on. This is really, really
you
fun.
In this round, Peltzman. Yeah.
This round.
Go back to your pelts.
Man.
Exactly. So yeah, watch it. Screw me.
For sure.
Speaking of, at least in my opinion, things that are groovy, our first movie of the week is Voices or Las Voces.
Yes.
Which features a Ryan Reynolds and a Anna Kendrick who are just about to be in gigantic movies at this point, right?
Oh, he's done movies. This is from 2014.
I'm saying this is Ryan Reynolds before Deadpool.
Yeah, sure, but that's the latest in a string of big movies.
I'm not saying he's an unknown.
Yeah, I was going to say, like,
before he just, you know, it's post-Green Lantern, pre-Deadpool.
Right.
So not peak Ryan Reynolds, really?
I think he had the peak before Green Lantern, and that was his slump, and then...
Is this pre-Pitch Perfect Anna Kendrick or post?
That I don't know.
This would have been post-first one, pre-second one.
And this is okay. What? And post-Twilight?
Who knows? Who cares?
Twilight? Wasn't she in Twilight?
Twilight doesn't count for shit.
Tiny bit.
She's like a sibling of... which one's the vampire? Jake or Edward?
I don't know. It's been a while.
Edward? I think she's something like that. She's in it. Because I feel like I've watched those, obviously, because I had a teenage daughter.
Yeah.
And
I've watched them because Riff Trax.
Sure. But I was just like, I know that actress. And she's actually a good actress.
Well,
what is she doing here?
The other thing I was thinking about, like, in terms of timing for this, though, the director is Marjane Satrapi, who is Persepolis, who did Persepolis. You know Persepolis?
Yeah, it blew my mind that she wrote Persepolis and directed it, and directed the film adaptation, and then this comes out. Like, huh.
Well, so this is what post, I think. I think this it kind of makes me think of the lady who did Anna Lily Amanpour, who did A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Like, whatever the next, she's got a new one coming, I can't think of the name of, that's supposed to be out hopefully sometime fall, spring time, I can't think of the name of it, but her next thing is, I think, just about done. But it seems like she's getting that same category of, like, this is one of those people that has, like, just so much cred with people that, like, whatever she's going to do, people are like, yeah, I want to do that. And I was just like, this movie is, like, this is one of those Marvels where, like, it was so under the radar. And then, of course, going into it, like, yeah, I have 2.25 crushes in this movie because you've got Gemma Arterton, who's just one of the most gorgeous women ever. And you have Anna Kendrick, who I absolutely love. And then Ryan Reynolds, you know, he's all right. He's all right. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, that's a hot dude.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just like,
you know what? Ryan Reynolds is sexy as fuck.
It's like, fuck that guy and his goddamn face. But it's like, so you kind of walk into this with, like, at least if you're so inclined in that regard, like, it's just sort of like you walk in like, okay, there's a lot of people that I like in this, so let's give this an open set of arms, you know? At least that's for me. Like, I was going like, okay, I'm not going to walk in with arms closed, you know, impress me movie. It was more just sort of like, let's just see how we do. And I think coming in that way helps.
I mean, you're going to approach it like Scott Stapp style.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Arms wide open.
Yeah, that's Barracuda face style. I
have to give credit where it's due as well, because the version of this I watched was the digital version I was gifted by Mudstuffin, who picked it up a while ago. Like, I've had this just sitting in a queue of movies, and he's just like, I picked up this movie. It's really weird, but I think you'll dig it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'll get to it. It sounds kind of wonky, whatever. And then I was like, oh, cool. Now I've got a reason to force myself to watch that. And now I'm going, motherfucker, I could have watched this months ago and been proselytizing this to you guys. And we could have all seen this earlier and seemed way cooler. Good on you, Mud, for finding I'm totally, this movie blew me away. This is so, so good. And there's so many reasons to it. There's a lot to talk about here. But the first thing to talk about, I think, for me, though, is that who the hell did they think they were making this movie for?
Yes, yes, exactly.
And again, it's like,
exactly.
But the thing is,
who are you making Final Girls for? I'm like,
if your answer is a guy with a podcast, you fucked up. that was Scott Pilgrim's mistake. That movie is amazing and has an audience of, well, Hall H at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
That's about it. This movie is perfect in so many ways and has its flaws that I found eminently forgivable because of how much I loved it, and does so many things right and goes where I did not expect it to go. And yet I go, I hope this isn't the thing where we're all like, well, of course I love that band, but you wouldn't be into it. Or, you know, well, I mean, I understood what he was going for, but the movie is probably too deep for you. I don't think this is me saying I'm smarter or better than people. I'm saying this is just weird, but I like weird.
Yeah. It's a little,
I don't think it's a fault of someone else to not be able to get into this, you know, but I do think I don't think there's a big audience. Oh, it didn't make a lot of money. Made $450,000 with an $11 million budget.
I mean, $11 million.
Yeah.
Neither one of those facts, by the way, seem like they're accurate by any imagination. Like, I really question that because it just,
and that's, again, that that's on, off I Wikipedia.
Saw that on
Wikipedia, so
I saw that on there. I was like, whoa. I don't know. But, like, it seems a little weird.
But if nothing else, we know this didn't set the world on fire.
No, for sure. And I think this was a dump. I mean, this was like Scout's Guide. where I think
this
it
is
got
limited release VOD. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and then it just got dumped to Redbox and dumped to VOD type of a thing, which is a bummer. You know, it's a bummer. Although I would go back and just real quickly on the overall talking about the what are the thing who's the audience or what things made for. I actually like. I'm kind of the opinion too that like, unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff that I don't think it's inaccurate to describe things that way because like, you know, it was last night I went and saw the Korean film The Wailing, and it's fucking amazing, and the third act is so intense and dark and mean and heavy and just like, oh, it's fucking awesome, but it's a 2.5 hour long Korean film about like ghosts and murdery stuff and like all this weird and creepy things and stuff. And so it's like, its audience is super tiny. Now the theater that was in was full, but it was Austin, you know, or it's Minneapolis or it's Seattle or it's San Francisco or LA or whatever. They're like, that's, you know, and maybe like, not to sound elitist or snooty, but like, maybe that's okay. Like maybe that's all right. Maybe it's one of those things where like, you know, the kind of multiplex, you know, kind of trajectory doesn't necessarily have to be the thing that you're, I mean, like, you know, I want people to really eat, you know, but like at the same time, like I just can't see like this last year, one of my favorite films, South by Southwest, is a buddy, Travis Stevens film, Teenage Cocktail. It's really beautiful and it's heavy and it's good suspense thing. Pat Healy's in there. Fabi Teresa's in there. It's really good. Really, really good. It can't play to $40 million box office, $50 million box office, you know, mall, multiplex. It just isn't.
Well, and you know? I think there are two things here to address. And like when we say like, who is this for? And there's, because I'm definitely I have a definite perspective on that, which like I was actually just talking to Megan about in regards to the Fringe Festival, because I'll keep this as brief as I can. The Minnesota Fringe Festival is an unjuried Fringe Festival.
Right.
You pay your $30 to put your literally ping pong ball in a thing that they draw out of like bingo. They draw there's 167 shows this year.
Holy shit!
If you're one of 167 shows in like 20 odd venues. It's nuts.
Wow.
And, if your ping pong ball gets drawn, you get to do a show. Whether you've ever written anything before in your life, whether you've ever acted before in your life, whether you were a homeless guy that was handed $30 that day.
Right.
Like, you get a venue. That's, you know, off you go. And so it's bonkers. And so because of that, you see things that go anywhere from people that, you know, are, people that do full on stuff where they have to have the little thing that they're actors' equity. To, you know, my ass, you know, on stage. And it's just all over the board. And that is kind of the beauty of it, is that you can go watch some of the best theater in Minneapolis that happens for almost no money for your ticket because people can do weird shit. And you watch some of the worst theater because people didn't listen to their director or didn't have a director, you know. And my perspective on doing art like this, and movies to me, kind of the same thing. All art is really the same thing, whether it's video games or movies or porn, it's all the same. You do, ideally, as the artist or the creator, you do the art that is the voice you want to speak to the world with. And if that audience is 20 seats in a tiny little theater, and only one is ever full on any given performance, if you truly gave your artistic vision to the world, then you've succeeded in that, but you've failed financially.
Right.
If your goal is to make money financially, you might want to go more broad than what that other concept was. Or maybe that concept was good and if people just knew about it, that's fine. But there's like the idea of like, I'm making art that is going to be not palatable to the masses, but it's important for me to say this to the world. That's totally valid. What I'm always baffled by when I say, who is this movie for, is why did a studio whose only concern is to make money, put money behind this, because they knew what they were going to get to at least a 80% certainty. The studio can interfere to a degree in a movie. That we've certainly seen movies that were screwed up because of studio interference, but you can't literally make it a different movie. You don't start making Transformers and go whoops, and then make G.I. Joe. You just don't. Like, you still have to call someone Optimus Prime, like, you know. And you know, you don't go from When Harry Met Sally to, you know, fucking Shawshank Redemption. Like, that. Sorry, you've started an uncertain path, and you just have to go through with it. And you might tweak it, but you're still stuck in that path. And so, like, when I'm always like, who is this for? I think what I'm actually talking about is what studio thought there was an audience big enough to return this investment.
I wonder.
And my guess is there's some kind of accounting bullshit that they want to lose money on a certain number of small films, but.
Well, you know. you do your movies for money and then you do some for prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here is, you know, Marjan is, she's won X number of prizes for Persepolis, the book, and then for Persepolis, the movie. You know, huge critical acclaim all the way around with her. So, we'll just, you know, she's going to do something. It's not going to make us a bunch of money, but, you know, come award season, it's going to be great. And I don't think they were bargaining on getting something this, like, it's not even like an art house film. Like, it's not something I feel like that the super snooty folks are going to go, oh, yes, a deep exploration of the human condition.
Right.
Because it isn't quite that either.
There's not enough pinky out on this movie.
It's,
to kind of be that pretentious. Although I think this movie does a better job than a lot of movies about really digging deep into a character. Like, Ryan Reynolds, to me, just kills it in this movie.
Yeah, so our premise, like, we have a simple premise, right, yeah. Which is Ryan Reynolds is a guy who lives alone. His only companions are his dog and his cat, which talk to him. The dog has a kind of dopey southern drawl, and the cat has kind of this mean Irish thing. And it fucking blew my mind midway through to realize that those are both him.
Any voice he hears in the movie coming from an animate object is him. The little bunny from the flashback is him. Like, yeah, I think there's four total.
Well, and then also the did you not think a little bit that the dog voice, the kind of like a, you know, I've earned the right to be called a good boy. That voice. And then he's doing that when those ones all sounded great.
When he does his impression of the dog, it's exactly the dog.
Well, then, but then later on when he's at that, the Korean place, Chichao, that place, and like he's talking to the goldfish. Did the voice that he gave the goldfish not sound like Christopher Guest's voice from Best in Show? Where it's just sort of like the voice he gives his dog, where it's just sort of like, I mean, that was just, I had to rewind it twice. I'm like, yeah, he's just doing it. I was like, bumped into Ryan Reynolds. I'm like, hey, Ryan Reynolds, how's about you? Deadpool was amazing. By the way, I have a question for you. That voice that you gave the goldfish and voices, was that supposed to sound like Christopher Guest, the voice he gave the Bloodhound in Best in Show? My guess is that his answer would be, yeah. And then he would wander off.
So we make a pact here and now for all to witness. Yeah. If whoever runs into Ryan Reynolds first,
right,
yes. That's what you have to ask him.
Exactly.
I feel like someone told me that he did all the voices, but I'd completely forgotten. And when you see the credits, you go, well, of course he did. Because that is, and then I was even more impressed with, like, because that makes your entire narrative hang together on a level that most people wouldn't bother with. That he is literally hearing his own voice in his head.
And did you guys have the thing early on?
Oh god, like, that's the kind of thing that gives me like chills because that's the kind of detail I would love in a thing that no one else would think is worth doing.
That was his call. He fought for that too.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Which is just so Ryan Reynolds has this, I mean, he has kind of a reputation for, you know, he can do a leading man. He's, you know, he did Deadpool, was great, but I feel like he doesn't, I don't know that I know his reputation as like a great actor. Like, I don't hear people talk about him like they would. But Jesus Christ, can he do that? Like in this movie, he dims his shine so much.
Oh yes.
And
it's so good.
He's like layers of socially awkward and introverted and obviously kind of arrested development, but not in a way that would drive people away.
But you get why somebody would have a crush on him, Arrested Development. Or it's a joke, you know?
Well, yeah, I meant Arrested Development as in.
But I know what you mean, but the thing is, he could have played it the way that show would. That's a perfect example. I can't remember now the other brother.
Never seen it.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Move on.
Okay.
It's okay. Take a breath.
Okay. No, but so, but there's literally the character that's like got like the weird mommy issues and is, you know, weird and like, but that's played for comedy. And like that's the easy route to go in this situation. And it's also the comedic route to go, which you would assume would be the natural instinct for a guy who's most commonly, you know, referred to in a comedic sense as an actor. And like, and the movie, we should say too, at least, the movie starts in the Shire and ends in Mordor. And he, I think, is fully, tonally correct in any moment in that journey. Right. And I couldn't believe how dark that journey got by the end, because I was not calibrated for that.
Yeah.
And not because the beginning of the movie is like, oh, wacky, silly bullshit, and then suddenly gets dark. Yeah. That's a different kind of animal. Mm-hmm. But this is a movie that, like, gradually reveals that, like, because he's never, like, he's never cartoonish
right.
in his happiness or joy. He's just not got great social skills, and he's a little too enthusiastic, and he doesn't quite know that no one wants to hear what he thinks in a meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all learned that, because we all, you know, it's just like a, you know,
a little trouble reading
it's
social cues.
Yeah, it's a dash of Asperger's and a pinch of only child, and you know, you can really quickly end up just being this guy who's perfectly kind and fun and okay, but you're probably not gonna invite him out for a beer after work.
Right.
You know, and he just kind of plays that guy who's like great, but is just plain white toast. And it's still kind of cute and affable, and then you have the pets talking to him, and that's just kind of fun and funny.
There are some scenes in the beginning where, like, he's driving to work and it's a beautiful day, and he's got like actual little butterflies flitting around his head.
Yep.
And they actually manage, though, to do the switch without pissing people off.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least me.
By which you mean you.
Yeah.
Well, I thought about you watching this going, where are you going to land on this?
Well, it's not that high tension kind of thing. It's more like you talking about how lazy it is to be like, are you off your meds? But they introduce that very slowly that like...
But they address it seriously.
Yeah, he's like, I don't like it's being on my medication line. Because it just kind of bums me out. And then we see like, oh, all of this, you know, butterflies and fun times, it's a manic episode, basically.
Yeah, he spends the entire movie on a crazy manic episode, basically.
Well, and the fact that we don't see him go off his meds... We see him go on his meds for a tiny bit. And
oh
get
God,
a glimpse
that's
of
fucking
reality.
Nightmarish.
God Jesus damn it. God. No, that when that happens, you know, and Megan just goes, I thought that was going to happen. And I was like, oh, I'm really upset that that happened, because I was really on board with this character, because he's charming as fuck.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go, oh shit. And then you think back to the previous 20 minutes and go, oh shit. Like, mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And then, you know, it goes from being like the cute movie where the guy has like his silly ideas that his pets talk to him because he's lonely, which could be like a 40-year-old virgin type comedy.
Yeah
for and sure.
And for all I knew, this movie could have just been that.
Yeah, because the marketing on this, by the way, is shit.
Yeah. And so, like, having watched, you know, having, I really did expect like Judd Apatow, like not stupid, but silly, you know, comedy.
Way
that was just like, look at this lonely
comedy,
guy
yeah.
who only has his pets to talk to him until he meets the love of his life, and then he, you know, starts to learn how to get along with people, and then, you know what, he finds out his pets don't need to talk to him anymore because he's assimilated himself into the kind of world he belongs in, and he's found happiness with another human. And he still loves his pets, but, you know, now they're just there to, like, snuggle him in his sleep. That's an arc this movie could take.
Yep.
And then, I guess we know there's going to be a little more than that based on the bloody saw on the poster. Right. But, you know, you really kind of buy into the idea of him just as a happy-go-lucky guy. And then the first time you see his apartment as versus like the way we've seen it through his eyes, he's go, oh fuck, this is bad. It's been a long time. It's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like the level of him lying to himself. I mean, that's months or years long.
Yeah.
To get to that point. And it's just, and then again, is it smart showing, not telling? Like, sure, he's got like, they reference like, okay, you know, a quarter of a psychologist got to go once a week. So you know there's some backstory, but really they let you just discover how miserable his existence is
mm-hmm.
through that one little moment of him taking his meds and seeing what his apartment really looks like and hating it.
Well, yeah.
And wanting to go back to life. He wants to feel good. He wants the world to be beautiful. You know, like that's such a great motivation. You know, that's Dr. Doom. Like, I just want to make the world perfect and only I know how.
Yeah.
Like, that's so good.
What else have you heard that recently? No, like, but as far as the coroner psychologist person part of it, okay, can we just give a nod and a bow to Jackie motherfucking Weaver? Because
of
that
course,
woman
yeah,
she is just badass. But what's
Kills
great about
it.
Her is I have seen her, you can see her play huge. Like, you can see her play, like, the third act of Animal Kingdom is a great example, where she just is vicious and big and awful and mean and cruel and just this large character. You know, there's an Australian movie called Three Blind Mice that she's in that's really good at. But here it's like she has to play reserve. She has to play a little bit like caring, but has to play like on guard. And then you parallel that to when he takes her back to the apartment later and she's looking around and it's just like, oh, I've fallen in the spear pit. This is real not good. And it takes an actor that's got, you know, again, taking, Josh, you said it with Ryan Reynolds, like taking the shine off a bit, you know, like with Jackie Weaver, same deal. Like she can play huge, but playing huge in this situation would not work at all at the beginning or later on. You can't play a big, Molly Shannon-esque character. Like it can't be a large character. It has to be small and you have to feel what she's doing there, you know, and that those elements are critical, just as critical as it, with Anna. You got he's got a thing for Gemma Arterton, who wouldn't? But then also you've got Anna Kendrick there, and she's got that kind of like awkwardness and sort of like the flirtation, but she's like self-deprecating and you know bad relationship and all this other kind of stuff. Those little scenes, like all that does is just load humanity into this really bizarre kind of downward spiral. It's not downward spiral in such a tragedy way. It's very different than that. So these humanistic elements are very critical, I think, you know, to really making the whole thing kind of jive. That and the fact that it's shot beautifully.
That's the thing. That's she makes this brilliant decision to ground it in character work. Characters that we like, that we can root for, that interact with each other in believable ways. Like every fucking indie horror filmmaker out there, that's what you start with.
Yep.
And then layers on this really unique point of view. You know, it has the, like, off-kilterness of, like, Joe versus the Volcano.
Mm.
Where
good job, bro. That's a good reference, actually.
God, I love that movie. So, you got, like, the guys working on the factory floor is something that you recognize, except they're all wearing bright pink bunny suits.
Everything's just that little bit of,
There's just a little bit, and then, you know, like, Pushing Daisies, like Brian Fuller stuff. It's just a little bit heightened, and then you kind of get to see maybe it's not as heightened as we think, and maybe we're just seeing it through the narrator's point of view.
And that's the thing, is I wonder what that factory really looks like. Well, I wonder if those guys, was there even a conga line of more than like him and two people?
Right.
You know, like you have to literally question everything you've seen when you know he is off meds, which is the vast majority of the movie. You know, until you see someone react to what he's done.
Yeah.
You know the end results. Like, if he's putting a decapitated head in his fridge, he has decapitated somebody.
Yes.
But what those events looked like leading up to it
could be very different. In the truck with him and Gemma, where she's...
We should talk about that, because that's a little nuts, huge,
and she's singing
point.
And...
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, laughing it up. Like, I wonder... Did she get in the car with him willingly? How did that go? But
was,
at
yeah,
the same
was,
time,
was
I
it
don't
a really
care.
Awkward, stilted, you know, conversation. Well, no, but it's important. The ambiguity there, I think, is important.
Yeah.
We don't need to know, but we should know that we might not have seen what we think we saw.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw his version of events, which always seemed to work out a little too well for him.
Well, and
despite
also
his
too,
awkwardness, you know?
Well, and also, too, once her head's in the fridge, which, by the way, her feet over the side of the counter when he's sawing her up, my God.
So good.
They could not have been better composed of a shot. I mean, that one in the shot of the forest when he's leaned up from her after he stabbed her, you know? And like that little, the way it's lit and the way it's framed, like, God, fucking perfect.
The man.
Oh, God. No, the scene with the legs is the two legs slightly rocking.
And then,
kind
of jerking her way.
And then
one
leg. Yeah, then one leg slightly
fuck,
rocking.
Man.
And then no legs and a trickle of blood runs off the counter. And it's like, that is.
It's a genius way to set up these shots and stuff. And that's what I mean. Like the narrative of it, it seems like maybe it's informed from an illustrator, from somebody who like frames and thinks about stuff in a different kind of artistic way than maybe a filmmaker would naturally first think of them.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, I was going to say thinking about the, him wanting the light, you know, the world to be, you know, kind of lovely and nice and kind of his demeanor and stuff. The scenes with Gemma's head, where like she'll kind of fuss at him a little bit and then she's nicer to him. Then he like reaches over to, give her some cereal. And then there's a little piece of cereal on her lip and he reaches down to kind of move the thing in there and she just goes, she kind of bites at his finger, but like all playful and she kind of laughs and he kind of laughs. And like, the difference between this story and the way the story is told, and like if Todd Solz did it, is he'd be doing something very different with her head. And so it's sort of like, I just feel like this speaks to this character much more authentically than the Solz direction would. You know, what
I also gotta say, I love that once she's in the freezer, she talks the way that he thinks British people talk.
Yes.
Oh. And to have her,
so odd. Her
say the kind of shit that
they have that exchange where they both say silly British slang.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, good day, governor. Top of the morning. And it's like, you're not even close.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
But like, and she can only be as good at British as
he is, but they have like an exchange of like six things back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just layer on layer of silly, quote unquote, British
mm-hmm.
colloquialisms. And you're like, yeah, this is his idealized version of what that conversation should sound like, with her being British and him being culturally sensitive to that and responding in kind. And it's like, both sound like idiots.
And at the same time, talking to a head on the counter.
And
As soon as she, as soon as the head goes in the fridge, I go, oh my God, the head's going to talk and it's going to be the greatest thing.
Yes.
And it totally was.
Yep.
So I watched this with Jess.
Oh, fun.
And she loved it. And she was getting into those beats too. She's like, oh my God, that head's going to talk. And mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. So we took that ride together. One thing that she and I observed is it's shot like a couple of scenes. And I was like, this is shot like Dick Tracy.
Hmm. The like, colors and stuff.
It totally is.
Interesting. Like, yeah.
Big, bold,
really big colors.
Everything heightened. And I mean, I could have said, this is shot like The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. But no, it's Dick Tracy.
This is where I went. Yeah. Cause we all love Dick Tracy. I was actually just thinking this week, like, I haven't watched that movie in years. I need to go back and watch that.
Were you craving, you would say?
I craving the dick.
Yeah.
Or at least the outline of it.
Is that Florida?
I I did get a little Dick Tracy.
Yeah, no points this round. The other bit was, I wrote something else down that was sort of, that really kind of started. Oh, yeah. So a couple bits with the dog and the cat. Well, the cat's the mean one. And it's just sort of like that. You gotta be a killer. You're gonna be a serial killer. This kind of thing. And then the dog is just wonderfully dog. He's just sort of like, he's so affectionate and nice and sort of happy. And then the cat talking about, like, if you go to the cops, you know, they're gonna throw you in prison. You're gonna get raped in prison. And the dog interjects and says, you know, nobody's going to rape you in prison, Jerry. And all that kind of stuff. All those little interplays between the two of them where, like, you can think about the way somebody's brain works and how you're playing different ideas about, you work something out, whatever the subject, whatever it is, mm-hmm. whatever's happening. And maybe not to this extent by a measure of 10, but like the way that those conversations take place, like the abusive self-hatred voice and then the kind of like, no, we're doing good voice. And then how all those things play together. However, later on, when he's watching all the animal sex on TV with the cat sitting there, and then he like changes the thing with all the animals killing each other, and the cat says, "Yeah, it's a gator killing a motherfucking antelope," and he turns to it as it's a gnu, and then the cat goes, "Oh yes, of course." Like he's just sort of like, it was just one of those things because I have done that in my own head. Where you go, oh, that's Steve Guttenberg. Like, oh no, shit, that's a potted plant. Yeah, all right. You know, that's what your brain does. Your brain will have those little conversations, but it's all projected. On top of the fact that cat, by the way, looks exactly like one of our cats. Our cat George.
Well,
I mean, like to
that's
a.
That's not.
Yeah.
That's not good, dude. That cat looks evil.
No, I'm telling you what. It's just sort of like a couple times looking over at George, like, you talk, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to put you down the garbage disposal.
Watching this, because like Megan's got a cat.
Yeah.
And we're watching this, where she goes, that cat looks mean. And like, not when it's like talking, but when it's just sitting there and he's like doing something and he looks over and the cat's just on the counter and kind of looks at him. She's like, that cat's evil. It's like, I think it's supposed to be, no, that the actual cat they used is evil. Like, she's like, I don't know where they found that cat, but that cat's evil.
Wait, this movie manages to suck you into something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to the point where I was sad that he had disappointed the dog.
Yes.
When the dog is just like, oh, Jerry.
Remember when you asked me if you were a good boy?
I earned the right to be called a good boy.
And I was like, oh, holy shit.
Yeah.
That poor dog. And like, wait, oh, there's so many layers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, yanking us out of all of that when Anna Kendrick is having her, you know, pre-death experience and just experiencing everything from her point of view, watching him listen to the animals that we now can't hear. Like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
But then there's that, like, black humor of kind of murdering his way through accounting.
Yeah.
And that is Gemma Arterton, Anna Kendrick, and Chubby Aubrey Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
That was very strange.
We didn't recognize that lady from some other stuff. I think she's been, maybe something recently or whatever else, but it was kind of like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, and not in a derogatory way, but she was great. But She was totally playing that role.
Yeah. No, and it's, but that's the thing, is that eventually you realize, like, you realize suddenly you're rooting for a character that is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, that what makes this movie so great, though, is they definitely show you, like, he doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, like, the whole idea, like, oh, mental illness, this movie, I think, has one of the most responsible portrayals of the fact that, like, sorry, bro, you're off your meds.
Yeah.
The world is just, because he always says, like, no, the world makes more sense now. I can see how beautiful life is. I'm happier now. Why would I go on those meds? My life sucks then. Dealing with the real world is hard. And it's like, exactly. You know, it is.
That's how you start. You know? Have to see the huge pile of newspapers in your apartment before you can start taking them out.
You have to see, and it's just like, and so you just go, oh, fuck, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm not saying he's unaccountable for his actions, you know, because at the end of the day, like, regardless of whatever, on some level you have to be, although you know, he's clearly not seeing reality as it is, but like, you just kind of go, oh no, like he is a monster. No, through no intrinsic choice of his own.
Right.
But because circumstance, both from upbringing and, chemical makeup in his brain, put him in a position where this is the only way he knows how to interact with the world. And what we've seen is not the case. And the only answers he knows how to choose are terrifying.
And there's that whole, when I see suffering,
yeah,
I am compelled to end it because Mom tapped me to slit her throat back in the day.
To finish her off.
And like, it makes me want to watch the movie again because you get that scene early on with the deer.
Yes.
Who's just like, looks up at him and is like, hey man, I can't stand the pain.
I'm not going to live. You got to finish it.
Yeah, he's like, I'll help you. And not knowing about the mom yet. I want to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
See how it, cause.
This movie's so good.
It's so smart. It's also smart that the end, like, chasey scene is real short.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that they didn't, you know, it didn't go James Wan on it.
He doesn't suddenly become on it, you know? Jason Bourne or whatever his name is.
They didn't even do the, like, slight misstep that the guest did, you know?
Mm.
Like, they stay in the universe.
Ah, yes, yes.
And gotcha. They don't, you know, they don't leave you running through the haunted house for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and fucking the dance number at the end.
I loved it.
Pretty much solidifies exactly what
this
movie is.
There's no way that would work on almost any movie I've ever seen. And in this movie, it's just like you have this thing where you just kind of go, and you know what I needed right then?
Curtain call.
That dance number, curtain call. And and it's just like, fuck me. Like, you guys knew that you'd succeeded in taking me on this journey and gave me exactly, cause you know, like we've said many times in the show, you watch a certain movie that either like actually scares you or it's just dark and you go, okay, I gotta have a palate cleanser before I go to bed.
Right.
This movie gave you the palate cleanser. They knew you'd need one after this. And it's just like, fuck, that's, you know, it's not cocky. It's confident.
And they thought they nailed it
and it was perfect.
It is like, then you think, oh, but we're still in his head.
Yep.
All these people are dead.
Yep.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great. It gives you that, like, jazzy, uplifty thing.
Oh.
You go, oh, you've been doing that this whole time?
Yep.
Clever bastards.
We should probably wrap on this one so we don't go for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. So. You wanna go do some final thoughts, Charlie, and then give us a number?
Oh, I was just gonna say, I like the little bickering where, he's bickering with Gemma's head on the table and then the cat and then she says something about, like, you know, the cat makes me do bad things. And Gemma says, well, the cat wasn't anywhere around when you killed me. And the cat goes, see, thank you, lady head. It's like, this is in terms of a bit of business, that this is just weird.
This movie has a lot of little moments like that. They're just great,
you know, and they're in there. And there's not a lot of, well, actually, I should revise that. There's really no winking. I don't feel like they do a lot of like, you know, like, this is weird. This is a weird thing. And to go down the overall scale, I mean, yeah, I really like this a lot. I think I texted you guys about halfway through. I'm like, I fucking love this. Like, I'm just a happy guy. This is great stuff. I'm a big appreciator of weird, you know, just in terms of like, and not to be showy, not to make some kind of bigger statement, but just like, if you're doing a weird thing, do a weird thing. And it's like, and just sit in that, you know, and like two of my favorite films last year from Fantastic Fest were Lies of the Fox Fairy and Brand New Testament. Both just fucking bizarre. You know, Lies of the Fox Fairy about a lady who thinks that she's got this ancient Japanese curse that every man that falls in love with her dies a gruesome death. And it's also a musical with a 50s Japanese pop star. And Brand New Testament is about, like, I think I've told you about that one. That's the one where, you know, they go look for Jesus' sister escapes the washing machine in God's apartment and goes looks for six more apostles. And it's Catherine Deneuve's in it, and it's there's a big gorilla, and it's but neither one of those films are they're not trying to be like, hey, look at us, we're weird. It's like we really love this thing that we're doing, we really believe in this thing that we're doing, and I feel like this is an example. And I would say maybe Scout's Guide to about an 89 to 91% degree would be in that same category, where it's sort of like we care about this weird thing that we're doing, you know. If that makes sense. So with that in mind, like, I thought it was really cool. Like I said, you know, you got 2.25 crushes in this film already. So, you know, I already had some goodwill going for it. But yeah, I liked it. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was very, very good. I wish it had gotten a better reception because it seems almost criminal to not have a cool movie like this get a little bit better of a run. So yeah, all that being said, I'm going to say, let's see here. Well, what do I want to do here? So four. You know what? If I was writing this, I would have given it a 4. So I'm going to call it 8. Fuck it. I'll say 8 out of 10 sodding jack-o'-lanterns. I love that bit where she says that. It cracks me up. Oh, cracked me up.
This made me start going, I got to really put together by the end of the year, like, a best movies I saw this year, and this is easily going to be on it.
Yeah.
You know, there's still plenty of time left, so I don't know exactly what it would be, but this will be in my top 10 this year for sure. Which is, again, like I said, unexpected as hell.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding,
like,
right?
Where the fuck did this movie come from? And again, sorry, Mud, like, I got to watch your shit quicker. But it's, and I think, you know, on your point, Charlie, I think you're right. This to me, and this maybe I'm naive and whatever, but this to me feels like one of the most uncompromised visions I've seen in a movie. Where, cause there's no way you got talked into the cat shitting on the couch. or, you know what? Let's add even more heads. Like, there's no way the studio said do more of that and we'll sell this movie more. You know what I mean? Like, I just, and, you know, who knows? Like, I haven't gone to read dirt on the movie or, you know, done interviews. But to me, this just feels like someone had a story they wanted to tell and, you know, as much as any artistic vision can, got what they wanted on screen. Because otherwise, I feel like someone would have said, what the fuck, we've got to make this better.
Hmm.
Whatever it was, you know? It's so great. It's so great. I love the fact that it just, over the course of watching it, made me go from laughing and giggling and, like, nudging Megan on the couch next to me when something crazy happened and we're both just like, what the fuck? To having those, like, oh, out loud moments where you can feel that you're still smiling from something and then you suddenly realize that you were still smiling because you just like this character.
Yeah.
To feeling that, like, that's no longer okay. To kind of that, like, you know, fingers templed going, oh no, what's gonna happen now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I like where this is going, and I think there's only one place this can go. And just, fuck, you know, and it never gets cartoonish in either way, I think. And Ryan Reynolds fucking holds it down. Like, holy shit, does he have to play a lot of weird shit in this movie. And I think he is perfectly suited to it. You have a really, really good supporting cast, really fun. The crazy moments are, you know, and like, such as like the conga line in the office, and, you know, things like that are just a little over the top, but technically plausible. Oh my God. One of my favorite things, that tiny detail of, hey, everyone wants to take home this leftover pizza. And it was like, ugh, you know, like, and then he picks it all up. And then when no one's there, just shoves an entire slice of pizza into his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this idea, like, that comes from somewhere. The average person doesn't do that. If you do that, there's a reason. And then you see him do it again at the restaurant when they get up from the table and there's like that half burger someone said he could have.
Mm-hmm.
And he just mashes as much as he can into his mouth and walks off. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. there are things that are problems, you know, and like, it's just those little moments that really just, and again, it's the character thing.
Yeah.
You care so hard. So, I'm going to give this I'm going to go, fuck it. I fucking love this movie. I'm going to go 9.5. Out of 10. That toilet he has in that apartment is weird, but I want one. tits. That's where I'm going with this. I seriously fucking love this movie. It's not perfect. It's not Psycho. It's not The Thing. But it is damn fine in a really fun way. So love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, in addition to everything that both of y'all said, the, like we were saying, the vision of this is amazing too. The way that it's shot, the cinematography, the way that colors pop, the way that the camera kind of takes a point of view, just some of the really bravura shit showing us what happens when he's on his meds and what happens when somebody interferes with his world. And they reveal that information really in a really interesting way. Like, we get that glimpse of it when he kills Gemma, kind of accidentally, ostensibly, comes back the next day, there's no blood, her dress is like white, so shining, smart. Brilliant, like, it's, she's like Snow White.
And she has like scars with no blood even.
Yeah.
That show that she's been cut, but they're perfectly smooth.
That's Snow White, Josh, when you just said just now, that Snow White
thing.
So
perfect.
That actually, like, I don't know if you were thinking about that ahead of time or you just thought of that just now, but that is goddamn brilliant, because if you think about a child's brain, like, what are the icons that they hold on to are things that they see when they're they're little, and they simplify them down to primary colors and shapes. You know, like, that's how the brain works when you're developing your brain. And if those kid movies and a Snow White would be one of those things where it's like, that's what your brain does to deal with tragedy and ugliness and violence and blood and bad and whatever. So what you said about Snow White just now, like, that fits on a subtextual level in that, like, scene, you know? It so does.
And it makes him the hero again.
Yeah, exactly.
I was almost expecting, like, a cartoon rabbit to come bouncing in.
I was just thinking that.
And I think it's another point in this movie's favor that she knew not to push it that far, which is amazing, because how do you know where that line is when you're so far off the fucking map?
Because that's the thing, and even had the corpse talked too soon.
At that point, yeah.
It'd be too soon. Like, it's the restraint.
But what I wanted to get, though, is you have this beautiful, lush shot scene, and he picks up her pristine body and carries it off, and then pan down, and there's just a bloody organ.
Yeah, there's just a pile
lying
of stuff.
On the forest floor.
A lump of something in a shoe.
It's just like, just so you know. And even then, though, like, the shoe makes you think Cinderella. Like,
oh, shit.
Oh, Jesus. So, yeah, this is surprisingly good. This is like Cemetery Man if it had a heart.
Oh, that's another one.
Cemetery
Man
is, Cemetery Man's funny, and it's clever, and it's a little bit horrific, you know, but it, I think by design, it doesn't have a heart to it.
No,
you don't give a shit about the characters, because it's, the whole point is nothing matters.
Yeah.
This is like,
this is the optimist nihilist movie.
Yeah, that same weird off-kilter take on things, but huge heart to it. So,
yeah,
this for me is an 8.5 out of 10. Earned the right to be called a good boy. I think it's time for a hawk.
That's my favorite pronunciation.
When you and I say that, we start sounding like Maria Bamford.
I would take that compliment.
Like Maria Bamford's Paula Deen.
The more I could do like Maria Bamford, the better my life would be.
The more I'll make a fresh ale. Yeah, there are some things that Maria Bamford, you know, maybe
there are things that I might not want to share with her.
Sweet. Ah, God damn it, that movie rolled. Let's take a break and we'll be right back with Don't Look Now. So next up we have Don't Look Now, or No Miras. No Miras Ahora.
Hey, you, don't it's look late. Over there, you.
Yeah, no looking now. Don't look later.
Don't look if you know what's good for you.
Hey, buddy.
What's the coming to go?
So we got our Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland lose a daughter to drowning early on in the film, and take their grieving asses to Venice, where husband starts to break down a bit. Wife meets a blind psychic who's like, "Your daughter is here, and she's covered in light."
I mean, I would say both of them break down just in different ways.
Yeah, there are.
They're both reacting to their grief poorly.
Yes,
which is fair. I mean, it's
not
good, but like, they both seem to find unhealthy ways of reacting to it.
So most of our film is slow burn of dealing with grief and slightly weird things happening, and then he keeps seeing like a child in a bright red raincoat like his daughter had, and at the end of the movie, follows the child as the psychic is like, "No, there's danger. It's no good." And corners the child and is like, hey, it's going to be okay. Child turns around and it's freaky looking dwarf lady who machetes him in the neck. And he bleeds out while wife like, bangs on the wall trying to get to
him. And silly things that seem relatively irrelevant in this movie are like, oh, there's a killer in town.
Right.
Which is not in any way touched on their narrative yet until that. And then, you know, there's a lot of symbolism in this movie, like the boy or the daughter, like stepping on a glass in the middle of a field, which is the, you know, thing of the mirror. And like, so like once you get to the end of this movie, you can look back and go, oh, I see the parallels you're drawing with the events we saw in the beginning with the kids and stuff and things that happen later. And then you get to the point where you can see that some of what he's seeing are premonitions of his death and funeral barge procession, I guess. Yeah. But mostly you just kind of go, when is something going to happen?
There is a lot of just kind of, yeah, when this was over, I went straight to Wikipedia.
Me too.
I was like, the fuck? And like, oh, I get the fuck. Like, all right.
I don't know if I get it.
Oh, there it is.
Well, you were...
I found my fuck.
I found a guy who would give one, and I got one.
Only one.
Just the one.
I was trying to show up with that character from Popeye, but I couldn't figure out how to. I'm glad you fucking Tuesday for a something. I was like, no, I can't. I can't.
Hamburger today.
I'm not quick. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not quick enough on the draw.
I think I knew that girl in high school.
That can go south real quick.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
We'll take you straight to the Sutherlands.
That goes right back into another conversation again.
Yeah, I did text Charlie in the middle of this movie and say, I'm seeing way too much of Donald's Sutherlands.
I hate how good that is.
Oh, what lies beyond that mountain? Oh, that's the Sutherlands.
I thought it was what lies beneath.
Do not go there. Yeah, what lies beneath was what was getting me.
Put on some underpants.
Starting to be suspicious. Who? Your wife. Yeah, it's what lies beneath. You know what I'm saying? Harrison Ford, this guy.
I've never seen it.
It's good.
Okay, it's really good. I just saw that part in the trailer.
How did you not? What the fuck's wrong with either one of you? Good Christ.
Charlie.
Yeah, well, I was busy watching The Warriors or Arrested Development. So.
God damn it, dude. No, Charlie, as far as I can tell, you live in a universe that has a 36-hour day.
Well, I'm on the aliens from Men in Black. They changed the count. They changed the clock.
Yeah, yeah, you have hours that I am so jealous of.
Although I remember,
seem to get everything done.
3 years ago, never doing that. You didn't require sleep. I remember that. That you were like, yeah, I slept for 3 hours, whatever, watched 12
movies.
That's
still
the norm. It's all good.
Yeah. It's just that I'm also acting now. So yeah. It's like, it's harder to watch movies. I'm just filling that time with rehearsals and performing.
Yeah.
So, but no, the same is true. Like, you know, like, it just, but, someone does this, right? Yeah. It's not me, but someone does, and I think it might be Charlie.
Well, no, I mean, my incredulousness just comes from the fact that, like, it made a metric fuck ton of money, and, like, I just sort of assumed that this would have been
one of those. I was too young to see it when it came out, though.
No. Surely not, no.
And then...
What Lies Beneath? No.
Yeah, and then gave zero fucks later.
No.
When the trailers for a movie, you know, the buzz for a movie is hot, and you're like, ah, dude, I want to go watch that movie. And then, like, a year later, it's kind of faded into the mist of all of the movies that have been ever made forever.
It is the bathtub movie.
2000?
Yeah, it was when we were in college.
Yeah.
I would have put that in, like, late 90s.
No, well, I mean, you're off.
Yeah.
So you're in the, I'm just saying, you're in the 90, sweet spot there, bro.
I mean, like, 96, 95, 96.
At a carnival, you still get the Cupid doll.
Just, it's like, you gave me this look that was like, you didn't hit me hard enough the first time, Daddy. Like, okay. I see where you're going with this.
I'll gladly give you a hamburger. Wait, no, that's not, nah, that's not what it was.
Nope. Now we're getting, what the fuck? I just Googled Cupid doll.
So.
How was, what?
Yeah, that was the prize.
Why is that not a horror movie?
Yeah. Annabelle should have been one of those motherfuckers.
Ooh.
Yeah, do a Google image search for Cupid doll.
No, everyone. Don't.
Absolutely
don't.
Not.
Yeah.
No.
Do it in the middle of the night. Tonight.
I don't. I fucked up.
Search for Cupid doll animated GIF. It'll be good.
No.
I just lost half of our listenership because I said GIF just then, but that's okay.
Gif.
GIF.
Yeah, we're very strong into Skippy.
GIF actually is a furry term. It's gazelle. I'd like to fuck. So that happened.
Quit hopping around the plane and get back on task.
So don't look now. I mean, he's doing a lot of cool assemblage of, you know, cutting little snippets together from beginning, middle, and end of this movie throughout it, where, you know, like, that's cool. I don't know if it's groundbreaking now. I think it probably was then.
Right, which is always the issue with watching an old film.
I love the sex scene intercut with them getting dressed.
I really do, too.
That is...
I really, really lovely. Think that's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very... But very
the rest of it, you know, like, when he's dying and they're just cutting together all this shit, like, I kind of get it, and I don't really care.
Go ahead, Charles.
I was just going to say, like, I was thinking, the one that kept popping into my head is, like, I kept thinking about The Omen. And, like, The Omen is just legit as fuck even now. Like, I get pricklies watching that and multiple scenes of that movie where I was like, and I know how it goes. I've seen it, you know, like, I know I've got that one and the second one on my shelf, you know, like, I know that movie real well. It still gives me the pricklies. And I don't feel like there's a lot of super, super downtime in that one. Whereas, like, in this one, like, I don't know, maybe this feels like there's like a 79 minute movie that's amazing in this movie. It just happens to be an hour and 53 minute movie.
Yeah.
And usually length is not a, length is not usually a thing that bothers me, but,
no, it's the girth.
Yeah. It's the chode. But ordinarily it doesn't bother me, but in this one I was like, God, stop walking around Venice. Like, I heard Josh in my head, like, just keep walking around forever. Stop walking around.
And see, I eventually learned to take solace in, man, Venice looks cool.
Well, there was that, and the fact that he was dressed like Venice. Doctor Who. That was another thing that kind of, like... Yeah.
Megan and I talked about this. Does anything in this film indicate that it's cold?
Well, I think because they said it's like the off-season.
There's no foliage.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, this thing, but there's no foliage. So I think the whole thing's like, everybody has to wear heavy coats so that one hotel can close. For the winter.
Right.
Because, like, there's no indication that it is not, spring, summer, whatever. You know, and it's just like, God, it looks weird. They're wearing these coats. So there's no snow and, you know, whatever. Maybe that's not normal for wherever they are. But it's just like, there's no indicators of that. And it's a weird thing that doesn't give you a sense of place or time that I think you kind of take as the default usually for a movie.
I will give them they don't have ugly 70s style.
No.
You know? They don't.
Because that's Julie Christie. Like, Julie Christie just oozes style. Like, that woman is just...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. To be fair. Gracious. But if you think of, like, Amityville as the height of just fucking hideous, how did anybody ever have sex in this time period thing? They don't really have that in this. But yeah, the things that do happen don't have a lot to do with each other or with the end, which is just kind of a... Hey, that subplot that you had no idea was percolating finally explodes. Like, him falling off the scaffolding. And then there's this really
Dr. Rickety Dick's dumbwaiter?
Yeah.
It's like, they apparently use for construction.
What's great about that scene, though, Josh, is that he gets rescued by Italian Mickey Dolenz. Did you notice that? It's just like I'm a believer and get a stick.
Literally watching that scene, I turned around and go, should I care about this?
I was a little into the idea of him falling, you know.
Like, but I just was like, he's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? Because this is the thing. This has come up actually in conversations with other actors this weekend when we're talking about different styles of stuff. It's like horror is the genre that punishes you for loving it, because the more you watch it, the less it's effective. And so I was like, does someone that doesn't normally watch, and this is barely horror, this is thriller, I guess, which, and again, that whole definition we can argue, but, you know, overall, not a horrifying movie. Most people be comfortable watching this, but I don't gasp, and I'm not concerned about his well-being when this happens, because I go, well, he's our goddamn protagonist.
Right.
And there's X amount of time left in the film.
And it's the rare movie that can pull that move, the psycho move, you know?
You know what I mean? And it's just like, so I just go, okay, like, so here's the next thing. It's like, oh, it's to show us that weird shit's happening to him because he's not obeyed the crazy psychic lady's warning.
Right.
But he's going to get a few warnings like this, and then we'll have the payoff at the end. And so, like, but does someone else watch that and go, oh, holy fuck? And, like, they really freak out? Because I just do not
at I think
all.
Just in that moment, I was like, ugh, that sucks. And all of the weird shit that they try to do to bring him in, like, poke him with pipes.
Whack him like a pinata. Let's get his tasty sweetmeats.
Grab his arm, grab his leg, grab his Sutherlands, you know, it's like...
I can, it's a chode.
Chode if you can. Get your hands around it.
God. What?
But yeah, go ahead, Charles.
I was just going to say, like, it's just sort of... I don't... The thing that's funny that you highlight about that scene with the scaffolding bit is like that in that scene, and then also when he has drunken too much and come home and he's like, I'm going to be sick now. And he kind of sigh vomits. He goes, oh.
And we need to talk about that too, because that is also a problem I had, is that like they use the idea of like, because again, I watched it with the captions on, because moans is used to cover 70% of the sounds in this thing. So like, I'm flipping out because my sister's having a boob grabbing vision of the future.
Yeah.
Moans. Donald Sutherland, like, I'm gonna be sick. And he runs in the bathroom. Moan. Moan. And then he walks out and goes, you want to give it a couple minutes before you go in there? I'm like, wait, did he shit? what? And then and he goes, I haven't vomited in 10 years. And you go,
yeah, well, clearly.
What?
You forgot how to do it.
I forgot how.
And then, and then he's like, yep, 10 years worth of vomit just came out. I'm like, okay, maybe she doesn't. What does that mean? Is that a thing? Is that words?
Oh, but that
like,
actually.
Don't go in there for a couple of minutes. It's not a vomit.
I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad that you mentioned that, Matt. That was another thing I want to bounce past both y'all, which kind of is a little bit of a, I don't know if it's because of the age of the film or if it's, I don't really know, but I wanted to mention, which is that like, I'm starting to get a little bit bothered, and I watch maybe more international movies than we do in, for the show, just than the average bear. But like, I feel like if things are said on screen, if our character does not understand them, like in Spring, they do that where like there's scenes where you, like people are saying stuff, but you don't know what they're saying, so we don't know what they're saying. That's fair. But like in this one, you know, the Donald Sutherland is supposed to understand some Italian, but there's like a whole shit ton of Italian going on all the time, and like. It's either that he's understanding way more than we understand him to, or that none of that's consistent. And I think that would have been fixed by having goddamn captions in some of those scenes.
Yes. And that is why I turned on the subtitles, hoping they would subtitle and say, you know, like in italics and then show the whatever they're saying in Italian. Because, and, you know, I get it. There's times where people are saying stuff and they clearly aren't communicating. But, like, when he walks into a thing and talks to whoever it is that runs the hotel or the restaurant, and is clearly knows what he's about there, and they're answering him, and they're having a full like. Why aren't we seeing what they're saying?
Exactly,
so IMDb, this isn't secret information.
IMDb that said that was a deliberate choice.
That was a stupid choice.
Okay, that's fine. I just cool.
He said like he wanted people.
It did bother me. Like
he said, like he wanted the audience to feel the alienation and the foreignness of the like. You know,
but he clearly doesn't feel it because he's able to communicate.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna say, I think that if that was his goal, then makes, he like, failed at that goal.
In Hostel, it makes perfect sense. We don't get the subtitles that tell us what they're saying because they don't know what they're saying.
Right.
But in this, it's like, okay, now I'm just missing a conversation going, why are you showing me a conversation I can't hear?
Yeah, you're just leaving That's me out silly. Of this.
Yeah, like, then just skip it.
Well, and then like, here recently.
It's good that it's an active choice, but.
Well, one of the more, I guess I'm glad to know that. I still don't think they did a particularly good job of it, but like.
No, I think it's the wrong choice, but I'd rather be an active choice rather than omission.
Yeah, like, or maybe it was technical for some technical reason or whatever, but like, and then it makes me think of is there's a film that came out, the release is sort of screwy, but I believe it may be on Netflix or Hulu or on Prime or somewhere now. But it's this Ukrainian movie called The Tribe. And it was easily one of the most undoing, unnerving, just rattling film experiences I've had in the last couple of years. It's a film set at this like boarding school, where it's for people, like children that are deaf. And the whole movie is done in sign language. But it's done in sign language where there are no captions and there is no sound.
Cool.
And so you literally walk into the theater and it's like, it's silent to begin with because of Draft House, but like, it is just silent because you're not getting big scores and big, you know, stuff. It's just really, really
that
quiet.
Poster alone is really gripping.
And that movie is a mean.
That's really cool.
Mean,
I've not heard of that.
Mean motherfucker. But it's one of those things where like, did part of what they were trying to do was make you, like, you have to go source out the story and figure out the story and figure out what's going on. But they're not going to make it, like, LA Confidential. I mean, they're not going to make it, like, super complicated. But on the flip side, you got to be able to.
They want you to get there eventually.
Yeah, but you got to be able to take all the data from what's happening here. But it's all in nonverbal, not only sign language, but just body movements and interactions and people's faces and stuff. Whereas like with this, I don't feel like that's the same thing because they're talking. Like, and Donald Sutherland's getting most of it, and he's like, bibbidi bobbidi 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 bobbidi, cool. And like, they kind of understand each other a little bit. And I don't think that's, I think that's, like, if that was a choice, that's kind of lame. Like, I don't know, it's just something like a very good choice. But.
No, yeah, I mean, like I said, I would always rather something that happens in a film that I don't like be intentional. Because then at least someone is having their artistic vision portrayed on screen.
Yeah.
Right. And it's up to me to like it or not, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure.
You know, I'm okay with not liking things, I'm okay with people not liking things I do. That's cool. But I, you know, the ones that bum me out is just like, I don't think it occurred to anyone to care about this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a drag.
Yeah, so like, for
okay,
sure.
Cool. It's a choice. I just would have made a different one. Fine. Whatever. Like, meh. But I don't know that I have much more to say about this. It's, oh, did we talk about the score yet?
No.
Okay. I mentioned I want to talk about the score. It's a good score.
Right.
I like it. And having read about it a little bit online, it is the first score by this person who was like an Italian pop star or something, who the director saw in one of those little boats and considered it a sign and had him come do the score for the movie. Who was like, I don't know if I can do that. I've never scored a movie.
Right.
Scored the movie and then stopped being a pop star and is a guy that scores movies now.
Huh.
And cool. But this is his first one. And to me, that totally shows. Because I really like the score we're given. I feel like it never comes in at the right time.
Yeah.
Because, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, like, totally. Like, it totally does.
I like your composition, but I don't like your arrangement's not the right word. What do you timing. Call it? I guess, it's just timing.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, Donald Sutherland walks down a street, and then all of a sudden it's just like, brr, 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 thing happens for like 7 seconds, and you go, he's looking at a cake shop. what are we doing? And then, you know, the camera, there's a POV, like hard whip to the left, and you're like, now, okay, now we're looking to Allie, like many we've seen before. Okay, and then, you know, like, later on a thing will happen, and you're like, why did that start? And then, like, sometimes it will end just before an impactful scene. And again, that can be a choice, like, to do things like that, because that can be a very powerful choice when done correctly. And, but I just felt like every time I heard the score, I was like, fuck. Like, it was good and a little jarring. And, but then it never seemed to heighten anything or pay off.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I like this, but I don't get it. What are you trying to do here? And now it's like, oh, maybe you don't know what you're trying to do here. And there was actually, I forget who it was, the, you know, so-and-so pop star, what's-his-face, was, ended up doing, De Palma films.
Huh.
Like, dude has done well for himself. So, like, he's clearly, like, figured some shit out. But, It was, and I've said before, like, you know, this is one where it's like, okay, something about this stuck out to me because it's enough to make me want to mention it. And so, like, I like it, but I think could just adjust the timing on things.
He did, and it would
be better.
He did Dress to Kill and Blow It. I was just listening to Dress to Kill, like, 2 days ago because I had that record upstairs.
Yeah. And it's like, but because it's good stuff.
Yeah, man. It's
you know, really it good is. One. But it's just, but it's not used well. You know, and they mentioned, like, the Wikipedia article, too, that, like, apparently, he did this big, huge thing for the love scene, and that was, like, vetoed by the director, and ended up using just a piano, flute, acoustic guitar, acoustic bass, and then they moved the score he had used for that scene to the funeral scene at the end, and the music at the end is great.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's like, but while watching that love scene, I was like, this is really weird music for this love scene.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds silly. You know, like, this is kind of hokey. And, like, apparently Duder is like, no, he was right. We made the right choice in switching it. And I'm like, I don't know if he did.
Yeah.
Like, because it's a little weird. I don't know. Maybe whatever. But it was, I don't know. It was enough that it made me really notice it.
Yeah.
And, but not in the way of normally, like, oh, I love this or oh, I hate this. But in, like, I want to love this, but it's not quite there.
I think I want.
It's a weird spot.
I want to love this, but I'm not quite there. Is pretty much my feeling about this movie.
Yeah.
I felt like I somehow admired this without enjoying it very much.
I think that's actually a great way to say that, Josh, actually. I think it's really
good. Yeah, like, by the end of it, it's like, yeah, you know, this is, I get what he's doing and he's there's some really smart shit going on here, and some really fantastic actors are involved in this. And I'm just so bored, and I don't care about your symbolism, and I don't care about your, you know, don't show me that kid riding his fucking bike over that mirror one more time, mister. Yeah, okay.
I mean, this had the, in the bad way, like the Argento Fulci feel to me. Well, like, cause those can be good, but they can also be like, whoo. Like, we are watching a lot of shit that I don't care about.
I will bet that this novel is amazing. Because it's by Daphne du Maurier, who wrote Rebecca, which is one of the just kick-ass novel that was a... Did Hitchcock do Rebecca?
Find out quick.
Which makes her really... Yeah. So that one was adapted pretty straightforwardly and was amazing. Like, this one, I can see, like, reading it and having that Edgar Allan Poe feel, you know, where he has this... He sees the woman on the boat and he thinks it's his wife or, like... But... Translating it to film, especially with these kind of stated goals of alienating and confusing and, you know, making the audience feel this turmoil. It's like, I get what you were going for, but what you were going for was to piss me off.
That was that Ghost Story where, like, that, I love that book. I like that movie more than you, but, like, I like that book a lot. But it's really creepy in book format.
Wikipedia says this is based after Not After Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that the collection? Oh, that's the collection, maybe.
It's a short story.
Several novella lengths. Okay, so...
That would make sense.
All right, so... what did you say it was? Rebecca?
Yeah, Rebecca is one of her
novels. Oh, no, Don't Look Now is the name of the book in this collection.
So I would be interested to read that. I don't think it transferred to film. It's one of those where, like... I feel less smart for saying that I didn't enjoy it, but it's also, you know, you enjoy what you enjoy. So this to me is like a 4.5 out of 10, Donald Sutherland butt cheeks.
It's weird that he has 10 and that you can choose to see only some.
Yeah, I see a 4.5.
Yeah, I love Donald Sutherland, although I honestly even feel he is weird in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, normally that's a guy that I would watch eat a bowl of cereal. And he's doing that weird moan thing that, like, keeps coming up, because it's like, I gotta vomit. And you're like, that's not vomiting. Like, what are you doing? And, you know, then, oh no, my daughter's in peril. And you're like, that's not, that's neither a moan nor a sound people make in distress. And it's like, okay. And it's like, I love that he's normally a very subtle actor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I dig, so that when he does go big, when you get that reveal at Body Snatchers with, like, the screech, you're like, fuck me, that's nuts. And, him as the pyro in, what was that shitty movie in the 90s? Kurt Russell played opposite him, Backdraft.
Oh, wait, did you say shitty movie?
I mean, look, I love that movie.
Yeah.
But it's a silly 90s.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but, like, by the way, if you haven't seen Backdraft, watch Backdraft.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's super fun. But you know what I mean? Like, that's almost a How Did This Get Made movie. But the thing is, like, him sitting there, just kind of mumbling out Dustin Hoffman style. His motivations and what he's doing. And he's doing that here to a degree. And then sometimes it's just like, he kind of forgets what he's doing and just sort of, like, wanders off into, I guess, Italy? Like, I don't know what he's going for.
You know, the director's going to indulge that, because we're in, like, this is an indulgent experimental
deal. And so, like, it's like, you know, so it's a movie that is not meant to be a super tight, hot 90-minute experience.
Mm-hmm.
The plot is certainly not meant to be, you know, bang, bang, bang. Not that the show needs to be. We clearly love our somber rural things. But given the lack of those two things, you would hope you get a character you can really attach to and care about. And, you know, if you throw Donald Sutherland in the movie, I would assume that would be the character.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't deliver the performance I'm used to seeing. And again, this is an old movie, like, it's, you know, but it's just, it's not quite there for me. And so it's just, this whole thing just always feels like it knew it had to, you know, get up for work at 8, but knew it wouldn't really get in trouble if it showed up at 9. And you know what? It's been slow. I'm going to knock off at 4 instead of 5. Right. And that kind of is the feel for the whole movie. It's like, it's a little lazy, a little slow. It kind of cuts a couple corners. And at the end of the day, it's like, look, we made you a movie. Hell, we made you a long movie, bro.
Yeah.
Like, we got nothing to complain about. That's 90 minutes. But, like, 90 minutes of spaghetti with no sauce is not as impressive as, you know...
produces very big fur so many poops. Metaphors.
Right. And so, you know what I mean? It's just, it never quite steps above adequate. So, this is... yeah, this is like, I'm going to say like a 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10 bizarre child drownings.
Grumpy dwarfs?
No, that whole concept upset me so much that I didn't want to acknowledge it. Happy?
Bashful. I like that she was
pretty
she's
bashful
just,
for most of it.
I like how she just does that kind of like slightly dismissive head shake, like, No. I think if you're talking about this movie being like influential for a lot of filmmakers, it's probably like an 8 because you can just tell that it influenced a ton of people. And clearly with so many different aspects of this that it influenced people. But as a thing, it just, this would be one of those few ones where like the length really, really got to me. And I was like, it was really like the suspense of the last like 45, 50 minutes of it. I thought all clicked well, but the trouble is you had 4 hours prior, so it's just kind of like, and that didn't jive so good. So I'll say 4.5 out of 10. 4.5 out of 10. You know, when I die, I gotta figure out a way so that like I can use like those gondola hearses because those things are pimp.
They are really.
Oh my
cool.
God, yeah. Those things are rad.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, look at that thing. The thing is awesome.
It made me think of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Death is the state of not being. You can't not be on a boat. I've frequently not been on boats. No, what you've been is not on boats.
So good.
Any chance you get to think of that?
Did you guys notice in the credits that director also directed The Witches?
Yes.
That surprised the shit out of me. I was like, well.
No, we pointed that out when we did The Witches.
Did we?
It's like, so this is Nicholas Roeg, who, you know, Don't Look Now is his big deal.
Oh, but no, Don't Look Now was, so like, I probably glossed it in my head.
He did this and a really fucked up kids movie, so.
Oh, very strange.
Good on you. Good on you, Nick. I keep confusing him with, like, whoever the guy is who writes the Jurassic Park movies, David Koepp. Because it's just the OE and the last name.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, yeah, I did Don't Look Now in Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and, you know, it's just a velociraptor in a tiny little red coat.
I did.
Anyway,
just real quickly, if we could take a like a 13-second break, I just need to run the dog out.
Finally, we have breeders or criadores, which is the
creatures.
No, creators.
Ah,
okay. Something to do with Kim Deal.
Yeah, criar is to breed, like as in, you know, I breed bulldogs and I breed chickens, whatever. So
and the two together.
Yeah.
It makes for good eating.
Enjoy my chicken pugs.
Mm-hmm. So two things right from the onset with this one. Two things. I don't know if you noticed, one of the production companies was called Entertainment Concepts Incorporated. And I thought that was kind of gave you kind of a clue as to what quality of film you're going to get, which was sort of like, it's a sort of a conceptual thing around entertainment. Then later on in the credits, you have the music supervisor. There's a guy named Tom Milano. And then the other guy who's the music supervisor, his name is Dan Great. I thought, well, that's, you know, I already like Dan. Clearly.
Was it this one that had it or no?
Well,
what was the movie that had the, 1984? No, that was the, was that Voices? There's another great production company name. I thought it was attached to this one. I could be wrong. Anyway, I think to me, the first most important thing about this movie is, this is a movie from 1986.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is an 80s as fuck movie.
Yes. Yeah.
I say no.
You say no?
I say this is a 50s movie with a guy in a rubber suit doing the alien from out of time going plod, plod, plod. And I went, yes. That is so cool. Like, someone grew up watching some dude in a rubber suit stumble around because there's probably no eye holes in his mask and went, I loved those movies. We could totally make one of those movies.
We'll just put like black dish gloves on him.
Right?
And it'll be to like talons. It'll be
great. And I swear, like, the second we saw the monsters, I was like, ah! And like, by the time you see the full body one, and it's just a dude in a wetsuit with some shit glued on him, I was like, yes. Well, these are recognizable household items used to create a monster that has no articulation and is very clearly a helmet.
Well, and this was a guy who said, you know what those 50s movies really need? Just some softcore porn. Just some tits and ass.
Yeah.
Just mail it in.
Breeders, subtitle, boobs and buttocks.
Change the score to porn score when they're on. Like, I was trying to describe this movie to Jess. It's just like, so this woman just like goes into a room, takes off all her clothes and does yoga for a while and then gets killed. She's like, seriously? Yeah, that's the, and the music turns all porny while she's doing it. And like, oh. And then they wander the streets naked. So wife actually was out for most of my watching this. They're like, hey, I got 20 minutes left of this. Now you're home. Let's watch this. Then we can move on to Stranger Things, which is fucking bomb.
Yeah.
And so she got to watch just the bukkake scene at the end. She's like, that is really gross. That is terrifyingly accurate. This is like,
wait a minute,
that is the most realistic cinematic semen I've ever seen. Just the fluid itself.
Oh, I thought she was like all the women in that like weird like alien hot tub thing. Like,
yeah, she's like, this is my life. Yes, writ large upon the screen. Yeah, so rubber suit monster is knocking up ladies and they're going to have his alien babies.
And really, the only important thing I think about this is that, like, the aliens target only virgins. Because they tried targeting people that had sex. And, like, one of them had a disease or something. And so, therefore,
yeah, the old lady. Yeah.
And so they're like, it has to be people except for the fact
that timeline's all fucked, though. By the way.
Of course.
Because
yeah.
He'd already kind of like, oh, the virgin. Oh, he's a virgin, too. Then, like, then midway through, it's just sort of like, you get the bag lady with the big accent. And it's sort of like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, but that, unless that was a flashback or something, but I don't want to give him that much credit. Yeah,
beautiful nonlinear storytelling.
Or, you know, maybe she just was a nun until she was homeless. But.
Well, no, she was the one who gives birth to the vagina dentata face.
Yeah, that was, thank you, because I was like, we got to say that.
Yeah.
That's some fucked up shit.
What
and to be fair, that monster is some fucked up shit. Like, that's one of the few successes of this movie is like, that is a practical, seems like overstating it. That is an existing effect.
That is an effect that took place in camera.
But it is pretty wonky donky fucking freaky. Mm-hmm. Like,
what I love about my relationship, by the way, one of the many things is as soon as vagina dentata face popped up, I just turned to my wife and went, what a wonderful phrase. And she knew exactly what I meant.
Yep. But the idea, and I think this is kind of like the thing that, and maybe I'm being a weirdo and going, oh, I'm going to read into the movie that probably is too dumb. The fact that all the aliens folks in the movie got to have sex with virgins, which turns into so many conversations among virgins in the late 80s, where it was having coke-fueled orgies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, and the thing is, what it's trying to do is call out, I think, the idea that the final girl is always the virgin, and how that's a bad thing.
Huh.
Because this movie is turning what is the entire 80s slasher genre on its ear and saying that's bad. And like of course we Charlie, you alluded to this in the intro, but like, look, I know it's old fashioned or whatever, but like, I just want the first guy I make it with. He can't be married or gay or whatever. I'm like, one of those categories self eliminates.
Yeah.
which really shows you the 80s-ness of this movie, that like, these women are worried they might fuck a gay guy. I'm like, if there's anything you've ever had to worry about,
it's one of those things. Like, I'm gonna,
fucking a gay dude is not one of those things.
I gotta go run out for errands for a little while. I'm gonna like, do a couple run errands. I'm gonna get a snack, but I'm afraid I'm gonna eat a stop sign. Like, it's not really like a thing. You know? Jesus Christ!
But you know what I mean. But it, of that era, that was, people were dumb.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's just like watching like the ignorance that's writ large on screen of people being like, what if he's some kind of gay, and then I fuck him? I'll be embarrassed. And it's like, no, that's not how that works. That is not a thing. Like, what the fucking fuck? And it's just kind of fun to see this cultural artifact. And again, like, that's speaking from a position where, like, I don't have to be, like, hurt by that language.
Yeah.
But I also can't imagine my friends that are gay being hurt by that, but just being like, that's insane. That's really funny. And what an idiot. Like, I think this is so wrong as to be silly. And, you know, if you're offended, you know, dear listener, that I totally get it. That's totally valid and fine. But watching that just was like jaw-droppingly hilarious to be like, God damn it. This is like when I was growing up, this was people's understanding of how the world worked.
Yeah.
Like, you don't realize how good we've had it in the last 30 years, kids. It's been pretty dope. So
this movie was, I mean, let's make no mistake. This movie looks like it was made for about $10.
Yeah.
By people who had never been behind or in front of a camera before.
Like I said, the 50s thing to me is like, it seems like such a throwback.
Our protagonist guy, so we have like protagonist like John Constantine on Quaaludes, and then we have his giant haired assistant.
Yeah. Oh, the doctor lady?
Yeah. So he is.
They never show her walking through doorways because the hair is gigantic.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this movie was remade in 1997.
Really?
Oh, that's bad.
Well, I'm just on the IMDb page, and it says, 1997, Breeders. An alien travels to Earth on a meteorite and mates with humans to preserve its species and destroy humanity.
Huh.
Oh, this is happening, you guys. Not this
maybe
week.
Maybe not immediately.
No, but that is happening. Right. Because that is happening. But, guys.
Right.
It's happening.
Of course
it is. Okay, good. All right.
So, you're right, though, that he is, like, our protagonist is that kind of square-jawed, completely unflappable dude, where towards the end you get him like picking up a gas can and just kind of idly tossing gas on the giant vagina dentata face guy, and then just kind of tossing a match insouciantly, almost just like, phew. He just like, it's not, oh my god, what am I gonna do? I'm like, fuck, where the gas? And like, I'd flick the lighter, fuck, yeah, again. It just kind of sploosh, sploosh. Flick.
That is a very confident lighter.
Well, not even gas cool. Splash. Not even cool or nonchalant. Just kind of, you know.
Well, he's just like, look, it's in the script. It's gonna work.
Like, here you go. It's very matter of fact. Just like, all right.
I love that the frantic phone call to the Department of Transportation to turn on the third rail to allow for that thing to be electrified is like, bring to room with two guys who are both sleeping. One at a desk near the phone, the other one in a chair near the desk with a bottle of Jack Daniels in his lap. Just to make sure we know, they're not used to doing much.
One of these guys is redundant. They only need one guy sleeping down there.
Really. And then it's like, oh, another crazy in the tunnel. Tell him to fuck off. It's a she.
Oh.
Okay. Oh boy.
Fuck all right. Tell it a...
But apparently that makes them stay on the line.
Tell it to telex her tits over to us.
But then, of course, some guy's like, I'm a cop. Turn on the goddamn power. So they do, and then the plot is solved, and it's like, oh, if a male says they're an authority figure over the phone, we got this.
Also, in that room with those two dudes is a button, is a, like, dial labeled the totalizer.
Yes!
And I really want to know what it does.
I know, I was going to bring that up, too. It's like, what do you do? I run the totalizer.
Yeah.
What's that do?
If you have to ask.
It turns
look at it and just be like,
well, me being me, I was like, it turns every delicious breakfast cereal into a shitty one. Where'd my Lucky Charms go? Try this, it has vitamins.
But, oh, God. And that fucking cop, dude, when he shows up at the guy who kills the, I'm gonna do, naked slow-mo yoga.
Yeah.
That chick. The guy that kills her, cop shows up at his house, or his mom's house or whatever, and he's like, you know, John Policeman from the police department.
DDS.
And you're like, that's pretty generic.
Ken like, Mansley, work for the government. Yes.
Hi, I'm Will Johnson, police department. And it's like, that's not a thing, cops. Like, come on, dude. Really? Not even like a city? Nothing? Like, okay. There were many corners cut in the making of this movie. I love that every woman in this movie is just like, oh my god. I'm allergic to all fabric.
Yeah,
all fabric at any time.
Well, that'll be all the old tried and true stand and scream, which is like, something's coming for me. Like, I'm going to stand and go, ah! Like,
yeah, maybe I'll scare it away with my high pitched screeching.
Like, you had time to run, man. He's got swim fins. Like, you got time. Like, go the opposite way.
Yeah. After four exhausting hours of swimsuit modeling, I'm not going to join you for lunch. I'm going to go exercise. Are they gone? Time to chop a fat line and do naked yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, someone came back. What? I mean, is that
they were supposed to. It was a lunch break. Right. They were coming back. What the actual fuck? And, like, the camera angles they had to pull off in that scene to not quite show us butthole.
Right.
I was like, you guys, you had to spend a lot of time doing reshoots to make sure that you guys weren't, I guess that wouldn't be accidental, that you weren't filming a porno. Yeah. Like, it just seems like more work than it's worth. But yeah, this is just the movie I was like, oh my god, these, every single one of these women exists so that we can eventually see them, like, kind of somnambulantly wandering around naked.
That just reminded me, the thing where you get big haired doctor and then detective, our detective guy, and he's talking about, like, you know, she's like, well, you seem to be kind of into this whole thing. And he's like, well, I was younger, my sister was raped, and I watched her go from, like, this, like, kind of vibrant, happy person to this very sad old person, like, in this, overnight. And it was very sad, and it just really scarred me, and it was just an awful thing. So, what, you want to go get a burger, like, sometime? I was like, wow! Like,
yeah.
I know they've got a lot of things to cram into a 70 minute movie, but, like, that was just impressive. It's like, man, there's a lot of dudes that, there's a lot of dudes I know that think they have a lot of game, or they actually do, but, like, ain't nobody I know who can aspire to the sister was raped, how we go get a burger in the same sentence, you know, game level. I guess
it's just challenge accepted.
Oh, and then later on we have our guy introduced, our guy from the guy who looks like a cross between Steve Buscemi and Martin Starr, where sort of like, he just shows up to be like, I mean, like, cause we need main bad guy. Like, we can't just have these bughead motherfuckers running around. You gotta have a persony person. Prior to that, though, his transformation is, but the one prior to that, though, the crafty gay fellow, his little chest bursty bit was great, because you can just see the dudes off screen, like, pushing little, whatchacallums, little bladder things where you kind of push them and they kind of bloop and flop.
That one was
pretty cool.
Surprisingly involved.
They do some fun practical stuff on a couple of these things. A lot of it's a little eh, but there was a couple fun moments that are some good kind of body horror type shit.
Oh, so
well, this will forever just for me be the movie in which there's just 20 minutes of women writhing in a bathtub full of jizz.
God, yeah.
Which, what, do we imagine what, cornstarch?
I was trying to figure that out myself.
I'm like,
what's the least pH balancing problem causing liquid?
Cream of wheat,
you know? It is really bizarre.
Oh, another little bit of business that I love, when the guy, they're chasing him down into the catacombs, you know, and the bug guy runs off and goes, "Oh, get him." And then, like, the bug guy sort of, there was somebody down, I don't know if it was like sewer crew or if it was a cop or something, but he, like, goes, it's like, there's some kind of battle. And then, like, and then basically the doctor and our detective guy just, like, step over the body, essentially, to get to the, like, we just can't be bothered. This guy could still be alive, but I'm not looking at you, not looking at you. And it was like, I had to pause it. I was laughing so hard at that. It was just like, they literally, a dude just dropped right in front of you, could still be alive. They're both like, oh man, awkward. Yeah, we got other stuff to do though. We got other stuff. You gonna be okay? You'll be all right. Don't look at him. Like, it just, that the whole bit just killed me. I had to pause it. I was laughing. And then our main bad guy with the triangle sweater, his face changed from looking like a cross.
It looked like the early New Line logo.
Yeah,
or something.
It was like this upside down, like, kind of Vestron looking thing. It was like, but then his face changed. He went from Buscemi Martin Starr to, like, Nick Kroll Martin Starr face. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, he's got to do his big monologue, so he got to put on a different version of his face.
Nah.
And it's sort of like, and then you get the introduction of, you get the, oh yes, 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 yes. Nick Kroll, Martin Starface goes, you're going to be the mom to them and it'll be really great. And the detective just points his finger, 1,000, 2,000, you're fucking bananas.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Just like, this must have been everything. What has been one take? Everything. It all must have been one take. It had to have been. Cause it's just, just remarkable. Also, their whole solution to this whole problem is to just electrocute 5 women. Like, that's their big plan. And so they're like, well.
Yeah, their big plan is just like, sorry, ladies. You're too far gone.
Yeah, presumably they are, though, right? They've got alien babies up in.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point they could be classified as no longer human.
Oh, that's what I wrote down. Right. That's what I wrote down. And in the bath, I wrote down, like, oh, that's where that topping from the tubes of cinnamon rolls come from.
Don't you ruin Cinnabon for me, you piece of shit.
Throw him into the Cinnabon pit.
It's like a Sarlacc pit? No, it's stickier.
Oh. That was almost gag-inducing.
Yeah, it was just,
like, and it just keeps going, and
this is one of those movies. They even look awkward, like, trying to fill the time.
Yeah, because this is one of those movies where you stop thinking about the story of the movie and you start thinking about the actors.
Yes, very much.
Oh, so then he's like, well, I guess I could, like, rub it on my boobs, or I'd, come over here, we'll make out for a second. Are they still filming? I don't give a shit. We've been in this fucking tub of cream of wheat for 2 hours now.
It's getting cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I literally
thought about all that stuff. It's just like, this looks terrible. Yeah.
This is a bizarre little film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Probably we could.
I don't hate this film. I don't even hate the concept. Like, there's something to this that could be a good thing, which might make sense that there's a remake then. And someone's like, okay, it's flawed, but maybe there's a story here.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, the part that, like, it was very clearly, like, in the style, and I have to assume, again, without having dug deeply, because that's work, that this is some kind of love letter to that kind of weird monster from space movie genre. And it is just kind of hokey, but then it also is like, but we can be modern and edgy. So titties galore, you know, or whatever her name was, can be in this movie. And that, I think that adds literally nothing to the movie. Like, I think they're making some kind of statement with the idea that it has to be virgins.
Right.
I don't think I need to see everyone naked for minutes or, what, half an hour eventually. I mean, look, I'm a dude that's into chicks. That's cool. But it's also like, that doesn't serve the plot.
Oh, sure.
You know? So it's just like, okay, cool. I think you also were like, maybe our movie sucks, but if there's enough boobs in it, mm-hmm. people will keep renting it. And that's a drag, because that's just, spend that extra time thinking about how to make your movie better.
Yeah, it's like, whatever. So there's extra in the world, you know? I mean, we know you can do crazy book shit, aliens coming in, and midget clowns, and egg shooting things, and bathtubs. We know this is possible.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, if I'm bored watching the boobs in your movie, you've got way too many boobs in your movie.
Mm.
You know, like, that's just, it's like, okay, this has gotten to the point of clinical, where I'm just kind of worried that they're chilly. Like,
I hope they're getting regular checks.
Right? So, it's kind of fun and has a weird throwback quality to it that I like, but it's not good, but I honestly could see that I might watch this again at some point. So, like, I'll give it a 5 out of 10. 5 out of 10. If that's what cocaine does to you, I think I'm good.
Yeah, I love that whole thing. Like, the way she's holding that little tube, it's just sort of like, she's like looking off camera like, do I do it like this? Like, it's just like, oh dear. Oh dear.
And I enjoyed parts of this, and then, you know, some of laughing at it, and I actually thought it was kind of interesting to pull in the vagina face and the big tub of jizz at the end. They're like, going for that, like,
I just put you on a watch list.
Well, yeah, doing a little, like, but reaching a little bit for that, like, Cronenberg thing.
Yeah, and it does. I thought it was society really a little bit,
shitty
too.
Art
yeah,
in its way,
like, you're
but,
doing
you know.
This thing other movies did better.
But, yeah, it's like, I can't even say it's so bad it's good you gotta watch it, because society exists and Extra exists, and there are so many
nuttier
than this.
Oh, that's true.
Deathbed, body melt.
Yes, perfect. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very well. Yeah.
You know, this is almost quaint for most of it. So I don't know. Just go back and watch one of the old 50s movies. Because yeah, so for me this is like 2.5 out of 10.
Ooh.
Bathtubs full of jizz. Can't get past it.
Yeah, it's sticky. I mean, I think we've basically covered it. I mean, it's sort of like, this is a background movie. I mean, it's sort of, you know, that's basically what it is. It's like, it's not, I mean, I stayed focused on it because it's a damn short, so it's sort of like I was able to do that, but I guess it's just a background movie. I did love the one thing that this movie made me think of that I gotta give a tip to the hat to the movie to me thinking of, which I'm sure was not in their plans, was when they're like, They're talking about the different rape victims. And I talk about, like, I saw, like, one was a construction worker, there was a lady, there was a this, there was a that, there was all this kind of stuff, going through all these different things. I kept thinking of that thing in Naked Gun where they kept changing the outside of the car, and then their costumes, you know? And as sort of like, because the detective then says, this guy must have had some excellent disguises. And I was like, wow, that's, man, just boldness. Boldness in the stupidity of the script. I mean, that's just like, that's just somebody walking outside, like, with no pants, just ready to greet the day. Like, yep, I'm going. Like, da, 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 da. Like, they're just really just committed to the dumb. So I thought that was, I love the fact that I made me think of Naked Gun with, you know, wearing the nun's outfits with the ducks on the outside, of the, whatever. So anyway, yeah, I mean, this is just a background movie. So I want to say, I'm going to call it four out of ten. I'm going to call it 4 out of 10. Medical lock, because I thought that's what that blonde chick with the short hairdo said, but then she said metal lock, but I was confused if medical lock was like a chastity belt or something, and then I was all confused.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Then I went to go look online, I'm like, wait, I don't give a shit. And so I went back to watching the movie again.
There you go. Great. Chastity belt would be a decent, like, stripper name of burlesque.
It would feel
like. Nothing would happen though, right? I mean, it would sort of be like, eh, she stands there. Well.
Comes out fully clothed, puts on an overcoat.
Makes you feel bad about yourself.
Just gives you that look.
Is this what you were hoping to see? Like, no?
Are you not entertained?
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with our films for next week. So for next week, we're going to get into some short film anthologies inspired by the fact that ABCs of Death 2.5 is now available. Because we all pretty much dug ABC's 2 as much as, you know, ABC 1 was not a big hit among folks.
I think I liked that the best, but yeah.
No, you didn't.
Compared to you, yeah.
No, you didn't.
There you go.
You rated it far, far lower than 2. Anyway.
Well, no, sure, I absolutely did, but yeah. I feel like you guys were
angry. I thought you meant I liked that one the best of the two.
No, like, I'm just saying, you and Adam, yes, I think, were the person angry, who liked and I was like, best. Dude, this is interesting and fun, like, this is,
yeah, and you were mistaken. So, for ABCs of Death 2, they had a public competition to do the letter M for the short. So they got 600 people submitted shorts for it. And they, you know, M is for masticate. Which were
films.
Right.
Because shorts is clothing.
Hey. Oh, you derailed that train. So M is for masticate was the one that,
your shit.
That ended it. Ended up in the movie with the, like, slow motion zombie running dude, bath salts guy.
Yep.
So they picked their favorite, I think 28 of the M's that they got and turned that into a little anthology, which I think is super neat. So yeah, we're going to watch that. We're going to watch Fun Size Horror number 1. That's available on Amazon Video as well. And we're only going to do 2 movies this week because when we do short anthologies, we tend to go real long.
They take a lot.
Real long.
You have to address each short, and that automatically is like 5 to 10 minutes.
Just to go back real fast, though, Josh, not to correct you, but I think that I thought that 2.5 is only available on Vimeo. I thought, but am I wrong about that?
Oh,
because I thought that when
I saw it on. I don't know. I saw it on Amazon. As well.
Okay, well that's good.
Always fact check us, listeners.
Easy to find, but yeah, Fun Size Horror for sure is on Amazon. That's what I was saying, and then our short for this week is called Geist, and that will be linked on our show notes on hshd.podbean.com, where you can find all of our stuff and subscribe to our stuff. And coming up next week after this one, we will be getting to another one of our Patreon subscribers lists. So, Troy, don't give up hope. You have been heard.
Yes.
And we'll be doing that next week, but we wanted to hit ABCs of Death 2.5 while it was available. So that's what we'll do. Fun Size Horror, ABCs of Death, and Geist. And with that, I will remind you that I've been Josh this entire time and say, bleh.
I am Matt, as far as you know, and I'm sorry. I will also quickly point out that if you are local, you'll hear this in time to have a chance to still see a couple of performances that are either remounts or things that you might be able to see later at this year's Twin Cities Horror Festival at the Minnesota Fringe Festival this year. That would be Bird of Seven Colors, which is being performed as a remount, and I think it has probably 2 performances left by the time you see this. And you'll have probably 1 or 2 chances left to see Itch, which is done by the folks at this super gory and amazing play whose name just slipped out of my head because that's what happens to me. Epidemic, was it? I think.
Yeah, that is sort of like, it's this guy with clipboard tells you some bad stuff.
Yep. And there's a show called Itch Now, by those folks, which is all produced by Raw Red Meat. Effects by Raw Red Meat, produced by Three Knives Productions. But, so yeah, if you're a horror fan, there's, those two that are amazing at the Minnesota Fringe Festival. There's Tim Uren doing H.P. Lovecraft's Rats in the Walls as a one-man show in the Mill City Museum.
Oh, perfect.
Which, by the way, is not a theater.
Oh, no.
You walk around to the back of the building and you go through an open arch. Because there's just, it's part of just kind of the ruins of this building.
Mm-hmm.
So you go through an open arch where they've hung a curtain over into a room that has walls and a roof, but all the windows have no glass in them. And there's 35 folding chairs set up. There is no electricity running to this room.
Yeah.
There are no lights, no anything like that. There's an extension cord that comes in that is hooked up to like 5 shop lights and a laptop.
Hmm.
And when the show starts, he enters in character as the protagonist of The Rats in the Walls, shuts the door, and then speaks for an hour.
Nice.
In first person and tells you the story of H.P. Lovecraft's Rats in the Walls. It's just this tour de force of one man memorizing an ungodly amount of dialogue that just destroys.
Jeez.
It's so fucking powerful and amazing. He did it for the first time, I think, 10 years ago and is remounting it this year. And he's doing, I think with the exception of today as we record this, which doesn't matter if you're listening, but he's doing 2 shows a day. So it's, you can see it. You have a couple opportunities. So if you're, again, if you're local, look for it. You can find it. There's A Study in Emerald, which is the Neil Gaiman, H.P. Lovecraft, Sherlock combo.
Oh yeah, that thing.
That's right. Being mounted by a company that I'm trying to get out to see. I've not seen it yet. Mm. But so, yeah, if you're local in Minnesota and, like horror, there are some cool things happening at the Fringe Festival. And, in case you haven't heard, this year they're doing a wristband system. Buy a wristband for like $20, $22, something like that, and you can watch as many shows as you want in a day. So check out the schedule, figure out what day you can see the most shows possible, and go do that. And have yourself a goddamn blast. I've got a show I've been doing that is not horror, it's a drama. And, you know, of all the people you've ever heard us talk about that are local performers, they probably have a show.
Yeah.
And it's probably awesome. So you can't really go wrong. So that said, once again, sorry for being me. Have a good week, everybody.
This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. Take care. Have a good week. Two super fast things. So we put this out, and this will be out midweek-ish, generally speaking. That's about when it comes out. So in a couple days, which will be the 12th. Yeah, 12th. Friday, 12th. Yeah, that'll be 12th. Little film made here in Austin. Not in Austin. Well, partly in Austin. But little film made here in Texas called Hell or High Water is coming out this week on the 12th. Directed by a great fellow named David McKenzie. It's got Ben Foster, it's got Jeff Bridges, it's got Chris Pine in it. It's a wonderful Texas noir. Not a horror film, but a really good film. And it's coming out this week. It's a very small, independent-y kind of deal. It's picked up by CBS Films, but don't let that fool you. It's definitely an independent Texas kind of a deal. But it's some kind of wonderful. So if you do get an opportunity, I think up in the Minneapolis area, I think either the High, whatever the fuck, or the other artsy one.
Highland.
The Highland, or the Lagoon, one of those two is gonna get it, I'm pretty sure, but, definitely worth seeing, really, really good. Also, Don't Think Twice, American Barbiglia's new one is out as well, that's another one that's popping around the artsy-fartsy places. The thing I really wanted to say, though, is, I know some people are really into sports, I'm a big sports person, some people aren't into sports at all, but if you do get a chance to watch any Olympic stuff this next week, or if you go online, it's even better. Go online, watch the part of the opening ceremonies, not the whole goddamn thing, but just the part with the Olympic refugee team. 10 people from refugees from various countries, war-torn, terrorism, all kinds of stuff, that got to walk out on that stadium and get to go and compete and be on equal footing with everybody else. And if there's ever a reminder of how cool humanity can be at just little tiny moments before we start selling Coca-Cola and Toyotas again, is little moments like that. So go watch that if you want a little pick-me-up this next week. Bye!
That's the only Breeders song I know. Are there other Breeders songs?
I mean, there must be. There had to be on an album, but...
That's no, the biggest rip-off album ever.
It's just like, are you shitting me? It's just the same song 13 times?
Mm-hmm. And a remix.
Ugh, God. Well, then it's just a Trent Reznor album.